Allentown by Billy Joel. Gang, it's our Thanksgiving show. Welcome to Channel Q on November 22nd, 2019. We have a Thanksgiving show. We got a great lineup today. We're going to start the show off with Daryl Cummings, who's the Chief Operating Officer of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, talking about homelessness in the LGBT community. And then after Daryl, Sandy Sachs is calling in from New Orleans. Sandy was the founder of Girl Bar 30 years ago, brought to life the whole notion about lipstick lesbians. And there was even a television show created about her and her partner, Robin Gans, called The L Word. You may have heard of it, that kind of highlighted this alternative lifestyle for lesbians that was a little different than other narratives about what lesbianism meant. And then we're going to conclude the show by having two of the reverends from the MCC churches on, Reverend Lucha Chappelle and Keith Mozingo, are coming in studio to talk about what we as LGBT people have to be grateful for this Thanksgiving time in the height of Trumpism, because sometimes it looks like we got nothing. But we do, right, Jay?
Of course we do. Wait, is my mic working this week?
Yeah, oh, my God.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, so they must have fixed it, because last week I had it unplugged.
Yeah. Last week was weird. Like, this mic just wasn't working. So I had to play sound effects to get through it.
Yeah, and you did. Inappropriately, I might add. Gang, we're joined by Daryl Cummings, who is the Chief Operating Officer from the center. Daryl, welcome to Sidebar.
Good job. Thank you. Thank you, guys. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Yeah. I know that in West Hollywood, we see a lot of our community out on the streets, trans women of color, I mean, trans immigrants, young gay men who appear to be drug addicts, and they're all living on the streets. It breaks my heart. It's like, what do we do?
It is absolutely heartbreaking, but it's not entirely surprising.
Right.
You know, our community is disproportionately poor, despite what the common thinking is.
Well, we're not all rich gay white males.
We're not. We're really not. And let me just give you a couple of data points to start this conversation. Even though there's very little data on our community anywhere, one of the things that we do know is that based on studies, that somewhere between 20 and 30% of young people in foster care self-identify as LGBTQ. Now, that's a highly disproportional rate.
Yeah.
And then if you bump forward a few years, we know that 40% of young people ages 18 to 25 self-identify, that are homeless, self-identify as LGBTQ. So it's not, you know, we've had some of this data for a while now, so it's not entirely surprising that across the board this is true. And, you know, that we're seeing it more now on sidewalks and in neighborhoods, in large part because people have been flushed out of places that they used to squat on Hollywood Boulevard downtown, that are now, you know, expensive condos and businesses.
Right.
And so, you know, L.A. is an incredibly expensive place to live, as are many places. So homelessness in our community is a real problem and highly disproportionate, in my view.
So I know that historically the myth or the story, I think maybe it's actually more of a story than a myth, is that LGBT people would be kicked out of their homes because of religious convictions of family members, or they were being brutally beaten or treated violently, and they would run away and end up in the big cities, San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles. Does that still happen in 2019?
It still happens all the time, surprisingly, shockingly.
Yeah,
given
that is shocking.
What we think the gains are that we have made. And it's not just people coming from, you know, small towns in southern states. It's people coming right from L.A. This is happening right here in Los Angeles, throughout California. So we still have a lot of work to do to protect young people who really need it, and protection from their own families,
right,
for God's sake.
And they come to Hollywood, West Hollywood, because somewhere in their head, they have heard of Hollywood, West Hollywood, the Castro, maybe the Village in New York, and they figure that's where I got to go.
People arrive and the word on the street is really strong. Mm-hmm. Where can I go where I'm going to be safe? Where can I go that I can sleep? Where can I get a meal? And so, you know, young people in particular that are homeless find each other very quickly. And then find out where they can go for any kind of services or help or safety.
The other segment of this that I think is obvious to many of us as we're walking around, because I live in West Hollywood and I'm not blind. I'm actually an elected official that's charged with doing something about this. But I see young, mostly gay men muttering to themselves, you know, psychotic. And I think to myself, crystal meth, mental illness, both.
Whoa. Yep. We see this all the time. in every age group, but it's particularly stark with young people. But you think about it, if you're sleeping in a park, one of the things you want to do is protect your belongings and protect yourself. One of the things that Crystal does is keep people awake. And so they can be awake all night. That has all kinds of, over time, as you know, side effects, ramifications for them. And, you know, if you think about what, I mean, if you're 15 years old and you get kicked out of your home by your parents and you get rejected by a religious leader and at school, you know, this takes a real toll on your mental health. And so the combination of mental health issues and substance use and all kinds of other things live within the population that we're talking about. And probably even anecdotally, you've seen that, you know, this is disproportionately LGBT people of color. So there's a combination. This is where intersectionality lives within young people who are homeless or in the foster care system or incarcerated.
When we come back, we'll be talking to Daryl Cummings more about what the center is doing about all this. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Another Day in Paradise by the incredible Phil Collins. We're talking to Daryl Cummings in the Los Angeles LGBT Center about homelessness in our community. And we were talking about the different demographics earlier, Daryl. But now, what is the center and your supporters? What are you doing about it?
Well, we've been doing quite a bit, even though it's clear that we're not meeting the needs. So, for example, in our new facility called The Campus, we have now more than 40 beds, emergency overnight beds for homeless youth, another 54 units for that where a young person could stay up to 18 months. And we're building 24 apartments for those young people. And we do things like collaborate with West Hollywood on a variety of housing institutions in that city where we can place young people, people living with HIV or have mental illness that are also homeless. We have a facility called Triangle Square, which is affordable housing for LGBTQ seniors. It's 104 units. And by the way, it maintains a 500-person waiting list at all times.
Wow.
We're building another 95 units at the campus. We anticipate applications for those apartments will number in the thousands. So there's another point that, you know, another data point, even though it's a little bit anecdotal, about how great the need is. These are people that are currently homeless. They're living in their car, or they're very home insecure, and they, you know, they're about to lose their apartments where they've lived with their partners. And so, you know, we also, through our healthcare operations, work with both people living with HIV and other primary care. People are there for our primary care services who are without homes to work throughout the county to find them places to live. But as you know, it's very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
So we're also able to, we have 75 scattered site apartments for homeless youth as well.
Right.
That we can help them with rent.
Well, the solution is, if it's homeless, is to build homes.
yeah, that's a big, I mean, if you don't have a place to stay, everything else becomes kind of irrelevant. So as, you know, we were talking, homeless people often are dealing with a whole variety of issues. It might be substance abuse, you know, just generic poverty and mental health issues and all kinds of other things. And in our community, you know, oftentimes we're single more often, so there's not dual income. We don't have families that we can count on, so it becomes even more difficult. So, it, you know, a whole human being has to be addressed. Housing is like step A. People need to be secure on where they're going to sleep at night,
right,
in order to think about other things.
I'm wondering if there's a disproportionate impact on transgender women and transgender men, because often with that segment of our community, there's issues of employability. When there's issues of employability, then there's issues about housing and ability to survive.
There's no question. I mean, trans people of color in particular are facing enormous odds. And, you know, employment is a really key issue. We just had a transgender job fair, and we had lines out the facility for people waiting to get in. So it was maybe 1,000 trans men and women seeking employment, and then a host of very mainstream companies wanting to employ them. So we're seeing that some of that change, but there's a lot to do with both people seeking jobs and employers to make these matches work.
Mm.
What about churches and clergy? Any support? Is it our LGBT churches and clergy that work with us, or are there mainstream churches willing to get in there with our community?
Well, there's both LGBT specific and there's mainstream religious institutions that are friendly and supportive. So from a spiritual standpoint, there's places for people to go. And right. there's good work that people do in terms of, you know, preparing meals sometimes and all that sort of thing. But by and large, the issues of homelessness and hunger and employment that in my view are in theory the responsibility of our government are left in part or in large part to organizations like ours. Hmm. To address.
So if people are listening around the country and they really care deeply about homelessness, and by the way, I think we all do. We're all impacted no matter where we are. What can people do to get involved? One thing that's obvious to me is when you hear about housing being proposed, go and become a YIMBY. Yes, in my backyard instead of a NIMBY, not in my backyard.
I think that's really important. I mean, here in LA County, and this is true across the country, when governments have taken a step forward to provide shelter or temporary shelter or emergency shelter in neighborhoods across cities, the reaction to that has been in large part negative. And our elected officials and bureaucrats rarely hear from those of us in those neighborhoods that say, yes, we're willing to do this. We want to do this. People deserve to be housed. And right. at the root of all this, and this is where I think people need to communicate, at the root of all this is the idea that it's okay for a certain number of people in our society to live without homes. Mm. And so those of us who believe that that is not true, and in fact people have an inherent right to shelter and housing and food and all those kinds of things, need to make that known. And we need to show up at housing authorities, and we need to show up at city council meetings when they're dealing with these kinds of things. Because what we're hearing otherwise is the other side, that is both not in my backyard, or they're blaming people who happen to be without homes.
Mm. Are there volunteer opportunities available at the center or other places help out?
There are at the center, and people just visit our website and submit an application for all kinds of volunteer work. But this is true about all other nonprofit organizations. People need volunteers, and we depend on them. So yes, there are many.
So I know we only got a couple of minutes left, but I have to ask Daryl, because I've known you a very long time.
Long time, Todd.
A very long time.
We're of that age.
You have been at the center now for how long?
Since 1993, with a 4-year break in between, so a number of years.
Wow.
Decades.
So yeah. 25
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Looking back at your life's course, has this been what you dreamed it would be? I mean, because talk about making a difference. I watched you. I've watched you over the decades in the places you show up, in the middle of marriage equality, in the middle of gays in the military, in the middle of HIV, in the middle of hate crimes, in the middle of trauma and drama, and there you are.
Yeah.
And obviously making a huge difference for thousands of people.
Yeah, I think about when I first became an activist, you know, and I was mugged twice because of my sexual orientation. You know, the organizations that were around, I mean, I did a little stint at the task force, National LGBTQ Task Force, a long time ago. There were three of us. Mm. And HRC was just getting started. You know, like, it was just a different time, and it was very dangerous. We did those whistle campaigns, you know, to let each other know that we needed help. And today, you know, I run a LGBTQ-specific organization with 800 full-time staff.
That's amazing.
Serving, you know, tens of thousands of people every single month and advocating on our rights. I'm married. You know, I've been invited to the White House to meet the president specifically because I'm gay. You know,
wow.
I mean, if you know, even though we're going through what I think is a very, very dark time for our country right now and our community in particular, I don't ever forget from whence we came and the shoulders in which we stand upon. And, you know, you and I have been around for a long time doing this kind of work. And my guess is that you look at this and similarly to I, that the gains that we've made when we were young, we would never imagine that it would be possible.
Never.
You never imagined
never.
It possible. And so it's important to hang on to that that historical trend that so many of us have been a part of.
You were a little queer kid in West Virginia.
I was.
And I was a little queer kid in East L.A., yeah. And I never thought I'd see the front runner for the Democratic nomination in Iowa as an openly gay man.
It's hard to believe. And you can't win an office as a Democrat. You can't even win a primary nomination unless you're supporting our community.
Right.
And it's absolutely remarkable. Yeah. So, you know, I think we'll get through this dark period and we'll, you know, get on a better path and here in the United States, here in California and globally. And, you know, we're a snowball rolling down a hill. We're going to win this damn thing, for everybody.
Hmm. If somebody is tuning in and they are experiencing homelessness or they think they're about to become homeless, where would you have them go to?
If they have access to a computer, they can just go to our website, which is the LALGBTCenter.org, or visit us at any of our sites in Hollywood. We're not hard to find.
Okay. And if you're in New York or Chicago or Miami, look for the center nearest you.
There's hundreds of centers now throughout the country, and they're all there to help people. And even if they don't provide housing and other kinds of services, they know where that you can find them. Okay. So look for your local centers, and they'll be of tremendous help to you.
Wonderful. Daryl Cummings, you're one of my heroes, man. Chief Operating Officer of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, longtime activist, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, right back at you, John.
I know. Boomer. Okay, Boomer.
Yeah.
Okay, Boomer. Yeah. I'm going to take that as a badge of pride now. Gang, when we come back, we'll be talking to Sandy Sachs, the founder of Girl Bar 30 years ago, Lipstick Lesbianism, here on Channel Q.